Welcome back. In this lesson, we're exploring accountability, professionalism, and well-being in remote work. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
It's a really crucial topic.
It is. So I want you to picture this for a second. It's 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. Your laptop is open on the kitchen counter.
Oh, a very familiar scene.
Right. And your phone is just buzzing with like 4 different Slack notifications. There's a load of laundry calling your name from down the hall. And you suddenly realize you haven't actually spoken a word out loud to a human being in 3 entire days.
Yeah, that is a uniquely modern scenario, isn't it? I mean, the aesthetic of remote work is always someone typing peacefully on a sunny balcony.
Oh, totally. With a perfect latte.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the reality is often a lot closer to what you just described. It's this collision of our professional and personal lives, you know, happening in the exact same physical space.
Yeah. The ultimate collision. Because working remotely sounds like this massive unlock for freedom, right?
Paper, yes.
Yeah, you skip the commute, you wear sweatpants, you control your own environment. But without a really intentional framework, that dream setup devolves so quickly.
It really does.
You end up staring down some pretty severe risks. We are talking about rapid burnout, dropping the ball on key responsibilities, communication breakdowns, and just a total collapse of your work-life balance.
The drop-off is sudden. But, you know, it is vital to recognize that the opposite is also true.
How do you mean?
Well, when you establish healthy, deliberate professional practices in a virtual environment, the upside is transformative. You don't just survive working from home. You actually build deep reliability with your team.
Right.
Your personal well-being stabilizes. And your productivity can actually outpace what you could do in a noisy office.
Yeah.
But the catch is that none of those benefits happen passively.
Right. You can't just open your laptop and like hope for the best. So to move from those big picture risks to actual execution, I like to think about remote work as running a one-person branch of a much larger company.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, you are the sole employee of your kitchen table branch, which means you have to do the work, obviously. But you also have to be your own branch manager and your own HR department, making sure you're taking breaks.
I love that framing. You are the sole custodian of your work environment. Because think about it. In a traditional office, the physical building does a lot of the managing for you.
It really does.
The environment enforces accountability. People see you walk through the doors at 8:45 a.m. They see you sitting at your desk. They see you walk to the break room.
Yeah.
So when you remove that physical proximity, accountability shifts entirely to you as an individual. You become solely responsible for your tasks, your communication, and proving your performance without any of those physical cues.
Which honestly feels like a ton of pressure at first.
It can, yeah.
Because if nobody sees me working, how do they know I'm not just watching TV on the couch? That leads to this anxiety where you feel like you have to constantly perform being busy.
That anxiety is so common, but it really stems from a misunderstanding of how trust works in a digital space.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
Well, in an office, trust is largely built on proximity. I see you, therefore I trust you're working. But remotely, trust is essentially an algorithm.
An algorithm.
Yeah, an algorithm based entirely on predictability and output. Accountability is the data you feed into that algorithm. It's the primary currency that buys reliability.
So it's not about being seen.
No, not at all. If you say you will deliver a report by Thursday at noon and you deliver it on Thursday at noon, your trust score goes up. If your predictability drops, your trust score zeroes out instantly.
Okay, so the professional conduct we talk about in today's lesson, the accountability, isn't about proving you are sitting in a chair. It's about proving your word is good.
Precisely.
And that makes sense of why professionalism matters so much virtually. I think there's this temptation to, you know, let professionalism slide when you're working from your living room.
It is a dangerous slip.
Mm-hmm.
Because professionalism in a remote setting is what maintains team cohesion.
Right.
When you don't have the luxury of in-person social bonds like, you aren't grabbing coffee together or chatting in the elevator. Your professional conduct, your clarity, and your reliability become the primary ways you respect your colleagues and build team culture.
Okay, let's look at the friction of actually doing this, because our reference texts point heavily to proactive communication as the main mechanism for building that trust.
Yes, we do.
But let me push back on that for a second. When I first started working remotely, I thought proactive meant narrating my entire day so people knew I was at my desk.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I was sending messages like, hey, team, just opening up that spreadsheet or reading through that email thread right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it felt exhausting. And honestly, I think it annoyed everyone.
I would imagine so. You fell into the classic trap of confusing volume with clarity.
Yeah, I definitely did.
Sending a million messages isn't proactive communication. It is just noise. And noise destroys productivity.
Right.
Every time you send one of those just checking in messages, you are breaking your colleagues' focus. You are demanding their attention to validate your own anxiety about looking busy.
I was essentially making my insecurity their problem.
In a way, yes. Proactive communication is actually about expectation management.
Okay, so what does that look like?
It means letting your team know your availability, acknowledging when you've received crucial information so they don't have to wonder, and providing updates on major milestones before a manager has to chase you down.
Making things visible without being annoying.
Exactly. It is about making your routines visible in a way that requires zero friction from the other person.
Which really requires leveraging the right tools. The lesson brings up a specific stack to handle this: Google Calendar, Notion, and the Forest app. And looking at how these tools function really highlights the difference between making noise and providing clarity.
The mechanics of those tools are fascinating, especially when you view them through the lens of your one-person branch manager analogy.
Yeah, like with Google Calendar, most people just use it as a dumping ground for meetings.
Right, but in a remote setting, your calendar is your broadcasting system. When you actively block out 2 hours for, say, deep work strategy document, you are signaling to your entire team exactly where your focus is.
And that they shouldn't interrupt you.
Precisely.
You're setting the boundary before anyone can cross it. And then you have Notion, which operates on a completely different frequency. Instead of tapping someone on the virtual shoulder in Slack to ask for a project update, Notion serves as an asynchronous workspace.
And asynchronous work is the superpower of remote teams.
It really is.
The mechanism of a tool like Notion is that information lives independently of time. You update a project board when you finish a task, and your colleague checks that board when they are ready to engage with it.
They check it on their own time.
Exactly. You aren't forcing them to context switch out of their deep work to answer a quick question.
Yeah.
You are leaving the information where they can find it on their own terms.
It's the digital equivalent of leaving a file on their desk instead of shouting across the room.
That's a great way to put it.
But both Google Calendar and Notion are external, right? They communicate with the team. The lesson also highlights the Forest app, which is purely internal.
Yes, for managing yourself.
Right. And the psychology behind it is brilliant. You open the app, you plant a virtual tree, and it grows for 30 minutes while you stay focused.
Right.
But if you leave the app to go, you know, scroll social media, your tree dies.
It sounds almost silly until you look at the cognitive science behind it.
Really? How so?
Gamification bypasses our brain's natural resistance to hard work. The prefrontal cortex gets fatigued easily when trying to maintain focus against the constant dopamine pull of social media or news sites.
No, absolutely.
So by adding an immediate visceral consequence like killing the little virtual tree, you provide a short-term incentive that helps your brain regulate its impulses.
That's amazing.
You're basically hacking your own dopamine loop to enforce self-regulation.
You are tricking yourself into being accountable.
Exactly.
So to see how these mechanisms actually play out, the lesson includes a really illuminating case study about a student employee.
Oh, yes. That's a great example.
Yeah. They started off struggling immensely with remote work. They were hitting all those pitfalls we mentioned earlier: poor communication, missed deadlines, totally disorganized. But they managed to execute a massive turnaround.
And the turning point is the most critical part of that study.
What was it?
Well, they didn't suddenly unearth a hidden reserve of willpower. And their job didn't magically get easier. They built scaffolding.
Ah, scaffolding.
Yes. They implemented the exact strategies we've been discussing. They built concrete, structured schedules, moving away from working whenever they felt motivated to working when the schedule dictated. And they established transparent communication routines.
So they stopped relying on motivation and started relying on systems.
Exactly.
And this case study isn't just a heartwarming story about a student figuring things out. It is a direct preview of where the entire economy is heading.
Without a doubt. If we zoom out and look at the trajectory of digital workplaces, The model of measuring success by seat time is dead.
It's totally gone.
The industrial era concept of rewarding someone just for showing up to a building at 9 a.m. and leaving at 5 p.m. is dissolving rapidly.
Because if you aren't in a building, how do they measure your worth? It has to be purely based on what you actually produce.
Right. The student in the case study became a high performer entirely because they managed their output and their reliability, not their hours.
They proved they could handle autonomy.
And autonomy is the most valuable skill in a distributed workforce. Think about it. If a manager has to constantly check in on you to make sure tasks are moving forward, you become a logistical burden.
You become more work for them.
Exactly. But if you can manage your own schedule, regulate your own focus, and communicate your progress clearly, you become indispensable.
That makes total sense. But there is a dark side to that autonomy, which brings up a huge friction point for me.
Okay, let's hear it.
The case study specifically noted that the student improved by establishing healthier work-life boundaries. We really need to look at the psychological cost of being always on.
Yes, we do.
Let's say I'm a young professional, I'm new to a remote team, and I want to prove I'm indispensable. I get an email from a manager at 11:30 p.m. It feels incredibly dedicated to reply right then, right? Doesn't that prove I'm hungry and reliable?
It feels dedicated in the moment.
Yeah.
But ironically, it is highly unprofessional. And it actually damages the entire ecosystem of your team.
Right. Unprofessional. I think most people would view that as the ultimate sign of commitment.
Well, think about the mechanics of what actually happens when you send that midnight email.
Okay.
First, you are ruining your colleague's boundary to prove a point about yours. You are essentially tossing a grenade of anxiety into their evening or their next morning.
Oh, wow.
They see that notification and suddenly feel an unspoken pressure to also be available at midnight. You contribute to a toxic culture of hyper-responsiveness.
I never thought about the collateral damage of trying to look like a hard worker.
The collateral damage is severe. And personally, you are initiating a cycle of cognitive burnout.
Right, because you never actually turn off.
The human brain requires total disconnection to consolidate information and recover. If the boundaries between your workspace and your resting space blur completely, if your couch is your office and your bedroom is your conference room, your brain never shifts out of high alert mode.
Which means your mental RAM is constantly being drained in the background.
Exactly. And when you are cognitively depleted, your productivity inevitably crashes. You start making mistakes. You miss details. You eventually let the team down.
So logging off and protecting your rest isn't a luxury. And it isn't slacking off either.
Not at all. It is a professional, ethical responsibility to maintain your own capacity so you can actually do the job you were hired to do tomorrow.
That is a total paradigm shift. Logging off is a professional responsibility. It's that HR department in your one-person branch stepping in and saying, the office is closed, go to sleep.
Exactly right.
So knowing that these boundaries are an absolute requirement for survival, how do we actively build them? Because it's one thing to say log off, and it's another to actually shut the laptop in your living room as your office.
Right.
Our lesson provides a fantastic framework for this, developing a personal remote work well-being plan.
This plan is where theory meets daily friction. A well-being plan forces you to take these abstract concepts of accountability and boundaries and operationalize them. The text outlines four non-negotiable components this plan must include.
Okay, let's pull these apart. The first component is establishing concrete work schedules, which sounds easy, but when your commute is walking 10 steps from your bed to your desk, time becomes very fluid.
And fluid time is the enemy of remote work. A concrete schedule means defining the start line and the finish line.
Why?
It means deciding I begin at 8:30 a.m. and I absolutely close my laptop at 5:30 p.m. You have to manufacture the transition that a commute used to provide.
How do you do that?
Well, some people actually take a 15-minute walk around their neighborhood at the end of the day just to physically signal to their brain that the workday is over.
Oh, a fake commute. I love that. You need a shutdown ritual.
Exactly.
Okay. The second component is defined communication routines.
This goes back to avoiding the constant noise. Instead of living inside your email inbox all day and reacting to every ping, you define the rhythm.
Yeah.
You batch process.
Like setting specific times.
Yes. You might decide you check emails for 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes after lunch, and 30 minutes before logging off. You communicate this rhythm to your team so they know exactly when to expect a reply.
You train people on how to interact with you. That lowers the anxiety for everyone.
It really does.
The third component is where I think people struggle the most. Stress management strategies.
Working on a screen all day induces visual and mental fatigue much faster than varying your physical environment in an office. Your well-being plan needs scheduled interventions.
Like taking a vacation?
No, this isn't just about taking a vacation once a year. It is about micro-recoveries. Using techniques like the Pomodoro method, where you work for 45 minutes and explicitly step away from all screens for 10 minutes, your brain requires those empty spaces to reset.
And stepping away means actually stepping away, not just, you know, switching from your laptop screen to your phone screen to look at social media.
Exactly. Taking a break from a large screen by staring at a small screen does absolutely nothing for your cognitive load.
Guilty as charged on that one, unfortunately.
We all are sometimes.
Finally, the fourth component is setting specific work-life balance goals.
This is the protective layer. You have to clearly define what your personal life looks like so you know what you are protecting.
Give me an example.
Well, if your goal is to be fully present with your family at dinner, or to train for a marathon, or just to read a book in peace, those activities require the same scheduling respect as a client meeting.
Right. You have to block them out.
Because if you don't define the boundaries of your personal life, work will expand to fill all the available space.
Yeah, work is like a gas. It expands to fill whatever container you put it in.
That's a perfect analogy.
If you want to dive deeper into how to actually build the containers for these habits, today's lesson points to some incredibly powerful reference texts. For anyone serious about mastering this, you absolutely must look into the books Atomic Habits, Deep Work, and Remote.
They are essential reading.
Right, because they provide the exact blueprints for building this kind of behavioral architecture.
Atomic Habits gives you the mechanics of making small routines stick. Deep Work teaches you how to protect your focus against the onslaught of digital distraction.
And Remote.
And Remote provides the foundational philosophy for why distributed work, when done correctly, is a superior model for both life and business.
When you pull all of these threads together, you know, the tools, the boundaries, the communication, it really reveals a completely interconnected ecosystem.
It does.
Which leads us to the final reflection prompt from our lesson.
Yes.
Yes.
I want to pose this prompt directly to you, the listener, to process as you step away from this audio experience. How can accountability, professionalism, and well-being improve long-term remote work success?
Based on everything we've pulled apart today, the answer is that they are the only things that guarantee it. Accountability is the data that feeds the trust algorithm when nobody can see you.
Right.
Professionalism is the glue that keeps your team culture intact across digital distances. And well-being, protecting your cognitive load through strict boundaries, is the only way to make the entire system sustainable.
Because if you sacrifice your well-being to look busy, the whole structure eventually collapses.
It is a delicate balance, but mastering it gives you an incredible advantage. And here's a final thought to mull over. Building this specific discipline isn't just about becoming a better work-from-home employee.
No, it's so much bigger than that.
You are building the exact autonomous skill set that future leaders will require. As artificial intelligence takes over more of the routine, automated tasks in our economy, the humans who thrive won't be the ones who just know how to follow a manager's checklist.
Exactly.
The people who win will be the ones who can self-manage, direct their own focus, and generate deep, valuable output entirely on their own. Mastering remote work is basically a training ground for thriving in an automated future.
That is an incredibly sharp perspective. You are proving you can pilot your own ship.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to challenge you to stay curious, stay deeply responsible with your digital habits, and keep actively preparing to be future ready. Do not just let remote work happen to you, design it intentionally.
Well said.
Also, be sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities, because taking action is where these concepts actually take root.
We also want to thoroughly acknowledge the foundational reference materials that guided today's lesson, Atomic Habits, Deep Work, and Remote. Exploring those titles will accelerate everything we've discussed today. Thank you for joining us for this exploration into the future of work.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. As you log off today, remember that you are the sole manager of your own virtual branch. Build your systems, guard your boundaries, and make sure you're the kind of boss you'd actually want to work for.